And so I started to like think about my feelings, and I was like, no, I guess this love that I share for my best friend that I've always thought was just like how you love your best friend, maybe it's because I actually love my best friend and like be with my best friend. And so I spent 2 weeks going to every church in the city that was experiencing a revival. And I would go to the altar and I would pray that God would take that away. And after 2 weeks, I vividly remember this last day. And I had cried my eyes out for like 2 weeks, almost every night at these different churches, thinking that because this was a revival and the Spirit of God was supposed to physically be there, that he wasn't listening and he wasn't taking it away. And I was like, I can't commit my life to a God and a religion that's going to make me feel like I'm broken or wrong. And I refuse to not be myself. So I said goodbye to God and I walked out of that church, and then I came out of the closet with flying colors and I never looked back.
Welcome to Normalizing Non-Monogamy, the podcast where we interview incredible people from across the entire spectrum of non-monogamy to hear their fascinating stories. We strive to bring guests on the show who have a healthy approach to non-monogamy. However, it's important to remember that everyone does it a little bit differently, and the views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect our own.
Additionally, we produce this show for entertainment purposes only. Please be aware that we aren't doctors or therapists. Consult the medical professional for anything regarding your health that you might learn about on the show. Enjoy!
Welcome to episode 183. We're Finn and Emma, and today we have a beautiful conversation with Philip. He's been exploring polyamory, solo polyamory, for about 2 years now, and we have a wonderful conversation about how he has shifted his mindset around relationships and sex, specifically over the last few years.
Yeah, just kind of building on what Emma said, like, as you'll hear, like, Philip grew up super conservative, came out as gay in late high school, was kicked out of his house. And like, so his whole like approach to how he's done everything has really just is beautiful.
Yes.
And we're really thankful that he came on the show to share. So thank you, Philip, for reaching out to us, for coming on and being vulnerable and starting your own podcast. So he's just about to launch a podcast called Dear Polly. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be sort of a Q&A type podcast where he brings in guests who are exploring polyamory or non-monogamy and answers questions from listeners with them. So we're really excited about that. It's launching soon. Information to how you can find everything about his show is in our show notes at normalizingnonmonogamy.com. Click on the podcast tab or just scroll down in your podcast player and links will be there to take you directly to the show notes.
Yes. So you don't want to do that. Before you jump into the show, though, we do have a couple of quick announcements. First up is our next virtual meet and greet is going to be on Wednesday, June 23rd. I'm just going to say it twice to be clear, from 9 to 11 Eastern. PM Eastern. And so we'd love to have you join us. It's only $10 to join. They're open to anyone. And more information is on our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com, and click on the meet and greet tab. Also, we wanted to do a shout out really quickly to our Patreon community. Thank you so much to everyone who is part of that community. It keeps growing, and we couldn't be more thrilled and honored to have all of you join the community. If you'd like to learn more, please go to our website again, normalizingnonmonogamy.com, click on the Patreon button. And I just wanted to say a couple of quick dates coming up. We have a men's group call on June 7th, a women's group call on June 9th, the monthly Q&A on June 10th. So all of that information is on our website, and we'll also talk a little bit more about Patreon in the outro.
Yeah, and one last thing that we wanted to say, as always, reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. We love to hear from everybody. We get back to everybody. And yeah, it means a lot to us to hear how you think we're doing, how you're doing, if there's stuff going on. I don't know. We love hearing from you as a listener.
Please don't hesitate to reach out. And especially if you want to come on the show too, we'd love to hear from you. So
absolutely.
On our website, there's ways to send us an email or a voicemail.
And just to follow up on one person who's maybe listening saying, well, I never got an email back. That's because you put your email in wrong.
That's true.
So this person reached out to us, actually had a very good point. It was about 2 weeks ago. We will call them Jitterbug because, well, that's the name they gave us and we assume it's a pseudonym. If it's not, sorry for outing you, Jitterbug. Anyway, the point that they were concerned about was the use of the term vanilla.
Yes.
As regards to people who are not either typically swinging, but exploring non-monogamy, a lot of times the term vanilla gets thrown around and they feel that it's sort of derogatory. And
yeah.
I guess we've felt the same way. We've really kind of backed away from using the term ourselves. We're not perfect about it. Sometimes when we're just shooting the shit with friends or if we're in the deep in a conversation, sometimes it still slips out. However, it's something that we are aware of. It's not something we tend to use, and we will continue to work on eliminating that from our vocabulary. So
thank
you for pointing it out, Jitterbug. We appreciate it, and we agree with you.
Exactly. Exactly what Finn said. So thank you again. And
also, this is just a great example of like reaching out to us and giving us feedback so we can continue to make the show better. So thank you.
We're constantly working to do that, and we love hearing from all of you. And yes, we want to continue to get better and better. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So thank you in advance to all of you listening who are going to send us emails with amazing feedback. And we look forward to those. And let's head into the conversation with Philip, and we will see you on the other side.
Let's go.
Welcome, Philip. We're excited to have you here. We've just been chatting a little bit about your podcast that you're launching here soon, and so we're excited to talk about that more later, but we want to get to know you a little better. You sent in an email not that long ago, maybe what, a month? And we made this happen pretty quick, so welcome. Welcome to the show. We're excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm actually really excited to be here. I listened to your show quite a bit when I was exploring the idea of polyamory. I was actually kind of forced into a polyamory dynamic, and it was not something I ever thought that I would be in. So I was, but my relationship was incredibly valuable to me. So it wasn't going to be a deal breaker. It was more like it was something I had to learn quickly. So I actually turned to podcasts in order to educate myself and understand how the dynamics work and how people make them work for their lives. And so I found your podcast and I actually really appreciate your work. So I'm excited to be on it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And we're happy you found it and hopefully found some others as well. So before we dive into how you got forced into polyamory, or maybe the Dan Savage poly under duress.
Yes.
I guess, do you mind giving us a little bit of a background on
who you are?
Yeah. Who is Philip?
Absolutely. So, I was born in the South, raised in the Midwest, raised on a farm. So I don't look it at all, and most people never guess it, but I'm just a farm boy at heart. I am soon to turn 40, which is not exciting. A little about myself. So I grew up in a really conservative family, super religious. My parents actually grew up in an even more conservative, more religious background. Some today may consider it a cult-ish. And then I've been on this personal journey to express myself and discover who I am since then. I've been somewhat of a serial monogamist most of my life. I go from one long-term relationship to another until this last one. And that's a little about me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here again, and thanks for sharing all of that. I
was just going to say, you don't look like you were raised on a farm, and you don't look like you're about to turn 40. So well done on that. So
very true.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
go ahead, Emma. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I have so many questions, I'm sure, but I'd love to do maybe an overview of your experience in non-monogamy and like where it, you said you had a religious upbringing. So I'm assuming nothing was modeled for you until somewhat more recently. So can you like kind of walk us through a high level version of your journey?
Absolutely. So I would say that I've been, I consider myself solo poly, and I would say that I've considered myself that for almost 2 years now. the journey, kind of high level, I fell in love with someone that was much more of a free thinker, progressive person than myself or anyone that I've been with before. And I knew early on in that relationship that things were going to be different and I was going to have to think differently because in the beginning, the very beginning, he was actually escorting. And so like, I knew that he believed in, and I think I'm going to, I hope I say this word right, autonomy. So like he controlled and owned his body and that, you know, he chose how to share that with me. So while our relationship did become monogamous pretty quickly after we started dating, I knew that it would, I at least had a feeling that it wouldn't remain that way, that it would probably be somewhat fluid because, you know, he owned his body and it wasn't mine to claim. So, which was kind of a new concept to me because in my, you know, religious upbringing, it was always very, was laid out very differently. And then, we had a great relationship, but as a result of my very religious upbringing, I've spent a lot of my life experiencing some shame and guilt around my sexuality. So I wasn't a very great sexual partner, and he had a much higher sex drive than myself. So we ended up opening it up one-sided only because he's more jealous than I. And he would play in order to meet his needs. And, I did not. And honestly, the depth of love that I have for him, I was pretty content. I didn't really see a need for any change. And then he fell in love with his partner, his friend with benefits. And, that was when I was forced into polyamory because it was like, if I was going to stay with him, I had to be okay with him dating someone else. That just, there wasn't a question. So,
but at the same time, I have like a lot of questions.
Yeah, this was supposed to be an overview.
I know. So my first question was when, and this was maybe more just a semantics piece, like you said, he was escorting, but you had a monogamous relationship. Just curious, did you two consider his escorting work not to be non-monogamous just because it was like a work piece?
When our relationship got to a point where we went from dating to being like officially together, he actually stopped escorting his own accord. I didn't ask him to. It was of his own accord.
Okay. I was just curious on that. And then I found it just interesting, and maybe from your perspective, I'd be curious, like, he laid out early on, like, autonomy was a big thing for him, and so he was going to do with his body what he would like, but it sounds like you didn't have that same latitude, like, he was jealous, and so the relationship was only opened up on his side, so he could have the autonomy, but it sounds like you didn't.
Correct. So there are aspects of this relationship and this story that I think a lot of people will look at from the outside and think that it was unfair, one-sided, and that he may have, I don't know if take advantage of me is the right term, but I think that it is really important to understand that there's always two sides to everything. So while that is the case, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, I had my own set of issues and I was not a great partner in all aspects of our relationship. And I felt a sense of responsibility to make sure that he met his needs. So I never felt like I was being cheated out of my due, whatever, you know, like I didn't feel that way at all throughout the relationship. I allowed him to play, even though he didn't want me to, because he wanted to be intimate with me. And I wasn't doing a very good job of being intimate with him. I actually had a lot of issues with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like, thank you for sharing that and kind of elaborating on that. And so it sounds also like maybe you weren't that interested in exploring outside of him. Like, it wasn't that he was necessarily holding you back, but yeah, it wasn't quote unquote allowed, but you also weren't really seeking it or
correct
looking for it.
Correct. I mean, we would both chat with people, mm-hmm. but he would play with people and I didn't. I didn't necessarily need to. If I had been given the permission, I probably would have on occasion, just because, you know, with some of the people I was chatting with, I built a connection with them. And the idea of exploring it was something that had I had the permission, I might would have done. But it wasn't something that I was necessarily seeking out and wanting to do and feeling like I was being denied.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes sense. And I think too, you kind of alluded to or said outright that like your religious upbringing created a lot of shame around your sexuality, maybe your sex drive. And it sounds like even maybe this non-monogamy piece, when that kind of came up, I guess, do you mind digging into that a little bit for us?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I've always considered myself to be a very sex positive person. I have friends that scatter the spectrum of the fetish world. And I've always celebrated their exploration and celebrated, you know, their sexual freedom. I never gave myself permission to feel like I too could explore it. Instead, it was like I felt like I could celebrate somebody else's, but that I couldn't participate. And ironically enough, between my long-term relationships in those little, like, they were typically somewhere between like 3 months and 6 months, I would consider myself a sex camel in those time periods. And I'll explain that. I would go weeks with no sex. And then like for 1 week or maybe even a couple of days, I would binge sex. And then I would feel bad about it. And I wouldn't have sex again for a while. And so, you know, I carried a lot of this shame around sexual freedom. I also called myself a secret slut because I wouldn't ever tell anyone. And I would never like show my face before I would meet someone, which all of these things are so terrible. I mean, I guess it's not terrible. All of these things were unhealthy in the way in which I was experiencing them.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, that's basically been most of my life. And then to like, add a twist to it, and the reason why my relationships have always been my relationships have a history of being dysfunctional in the sexual aspect, because I fall in love with people for who they are and how they make me feel in life. I'm very attracted to people that are very inspirational, that are very educated, because I like to learn from someone. I like to connect with them, learn from them. I get inspired by them, not based on sexual preferences. And so every one of my long-term relationships have been with bottoms, and I consider myself a bottom. So, you know, I'm generally really good at playing the top role for like 6 months to a year. And then after that, it's like, I just don't have the stamina to maintain that role. And I didn't have the confidence in sex to be able to explore other ways of pleasing each other. I had never been big on toys. I had never been creative in sex and in terms of just like, how can you work with each other to please each other? I was so vanilla that it was sad. It's sad. And it's affected all of my relationships.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's a lot in there. I think that it's,
yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah. Like the piece about, like you said, like you fall in love with them for who they are and how they make you feel. But then after like 6 months or a year, like your needs start to creep back in and then it sort of shifts. And I
would disagree with that.
Okay.
It's never been my needs that have destroyed my relationship in the end. It's my lack of performance, mm-hmm. but I am the kind of person, and I think that's why once I really began to understand polyamory, I've actually embraced it so much, is that I was always someone that was able to love and appreciate someone for the role that they were able to play in my life without necessarily having to force them to be my everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't ever feel like it was my needs not being fulfilled that destroyed our relationship. I was always able to just stuff my needs like back in the closet somewhere and not worry about them. I also hadn't really ever had a great sex life. So sex wasn't the important part of my relationship. Sex was actually pretty meaningless in my relationship. For me, it was the day-to-day life. It was the hours that you spend together, the nights that you hold each other. That's what makes up the important part of my relationship. Sex was like, if I could jerk off in private to some porn if I need to satisfy myself. That was not a contributing factor to whether or not our relationship would go on. I would still be with my ex if he would let me, but he promoted me to best friend instead.
I was going to ask you how that relationship, that was your first introduction to non-monogamy, and you were kind of poly under duress for a little bit. Do you mind talking about how that relationship progress and where you're at today?
Absolutely. So it's a wild and weird road. I call him my best friend soulmate. I think if soulmates exist, he definitely is mine. I cannot imagine my life without him. We still talk every day. We see each other almost every day. As I was introduced to polyamory, it was because he had fallen in love with his friend with benefits. And I actually, while I was not educating myself on poly like I should have been, I knew that if our relationship were going to go long term, and we were together 5 years, if it were going to go on forever, I knew that it was something I was going to have to adapt to, because of the way in which he finds his partners. He's not the type of person that hooks up on a whim. Like, he doesn't talk to someone and then 30 minutes later, he's like, okay, let's hook up. That's not him. He's the type of person that needs some kind of an emotional connection to someone in order to be intimate with them. So he would often talk with people for months before he would meet up with them and they would start this, you know, sexual relationship. So I knew that it was going to happen at some point. This one did catch me by surprise, though, because while I knew that that was the inevitable, I never really prepared myself for it and I didn't educate myself for it. And he really connected with this individual quickly. They had incredible sexual chemistry. They also had just great chemistry in general in terms of, connecting with each other on a mental and emotional level. And when I was given that ultimatum of basically, you're going to have to adapt to be poly or you can't be, you know, my partner anymore, I began to educate myself. I read The Ethical Slut, which I actually think everyone should be required to read because of the way that it focuses on self-awareness, communication and like understanding where your partner's coming from. I think those are like three key things that make a great relationship. But I started educating myself and I realized that there were so many things that I was already doing in my relationship, the way in which I prioritized the connection, the way in which I accepted the relationship and how we provided for each other for exactly what it was without expectations of it being more or different. And so once I had those realizations, I dove in. I was like, yes, I understand, you know, the dynamics of polyamory and how it gives you the freedom to be able to make a connection with someone and value that connection for what it is. Because if there's something missing in that connection that's not natural, you don't have to force that expectation. You can actually find that in another relationship and another connection with another person. And then that way, as long as everybody's needs are being met in the ways in which you can, then everybody's happy. As I'm on that journey over the course of like a year, my ex is on his own journey, and we end up in this really weird twist where at the end of about a year, somewhere between a year and a year and a half, he is having his own realization that he's not as progressive as he thought he was. And he actually takes this hard conservative swing. And that's actually why I was promoted to best friend. He realized that he needs one partner that is his everything. And he doesn't want to have multiple partners. And he doesn't want to have a partner that can't, you know, also make love to him and be his emotional support. And so we just totally flipped roles, totally flipped perspectives. And that's how we landed where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And
that's hard.
It's super hard too. Yeah.
Because you did all of this work to get to where you could be in that relationship and not, you kind of undid all of the socialization that you had grown up with so you could make that work. And then you got there and then he's like, oh, now I'm flipping the tables. Like that's really hard.
I'll tell you though, so I mean, I'm not at all going to lie and say that it was easy, and it's still hard at times. The depth of love that I have for him is incredible, and it hasn't changed at all. I still love him as much as I did beforehand. But while I may have started that journey because of him, I would say about halfway through, I continued on that journey for me. And what I think it will do and how I feel that it will impact my life. So, and one of the things that, you know, I really appreciate about like the mindset that kind of goes hand in hand with polyamory is that when you learn to love someone for exactly who they are without your imposed expectations of what they're going to do for you or how they're going to meet your expectations, then when it comes to a turning point where it may not continue forever or the dynamic evolves into a friendship instead of, you know, a relationship, it does make it easier. I know that sounds crazy, but it makes it easier to make that transition because it leaves you in a mindset of celebrating what you had and celebrating what it gets to continue to be versus necessarily being sad about how it didn't meet your expectations. Oh, I'm tearing up.
No, I think that's...
It's super powerful because... And it's a beautiful way to look at it because... It's almost like trying to focus on the depth and the positivity that's come from that relationship and how, and feeling lucky that it gets to continue in whatever way it gets to continue.
Well, and I was going to ask, like, I think, and you touched on it here, so you kind of answered the question already, but like, you said, like, you got promoted to best friend and you are still in love with this person and you see them every day and you're still very connected. But like, I could see for myself, like, that would be really hard to be in love with somebody and see them every day and it's just constantly there, but it's maybe not the relationship that you were hoping for, but you also yet got to a place where you just have accepted that and love it for what it is and cherish what it, the way it was, and like celebrate it. And I think that's a really hard thing to do. And I'm impressed by that.
I would have to say, I think the part that makes me sad is not that the relationship isn't today what I thought that it would be or that I wanted it to be. The last 3 years of our relationship, we were not sexual at all. So essentially, our relationship has not changed at all. We are still exactly the same thing. It just has a different title. Mm-hmm. Where I get sad is when I didn't meet his expectations. And so he feels like the title or the dynamic of that relationship can't continue because I didn't meet his expectations. That makes me sad. What makes me sad is that, you know, I found someone that I love and adore, and we're just not sexually compatible.
Mm-hmm. And so
it happens.
Right. You know? And so from his point of view, because you're not sexually compatible, your relationship has gone down to a friendship.
Mm-hmm. Well, even
we're
though...
As I was saying that, I was like, I don't think that should be down. Like, it's just transitioned into a different title.
Well, but as you said, though, Philip, like, the semantics, that like, the day-to-day hasn't changed. It's really more a title. And so, but I think that is still hard to, like, have your title stripped when the role you play is the same as it was for 5 years, or at least three of the 5 years.
When the title first changed, that I think was the hardest thing I've had to deal with through the whole journey. Because especially once I went through my understanding of polyamory, I was really able to celebrate what our relationship was and that I was able to kind of let go of the guilt that I had about not being able to be his everything. And I educated myself on polyamory. He had a very limited understanding of polyamory, and he did not continue to educate himself. So like, as I grew into this, you know, elevated awareness and started to celebrate our relationship for what it was and thinking that, you know, based on my understanding of polyamory, like we're great. Like, we can have this dynamic. We can let go of that expectation of sexual chemistry. And because I feel like polyamory is about connections. It's not necessarily about sex. It's about connection. So you can have an incredibly deep relationship, and it doesn't have to have a sexual chemistry. It can just be about the connection you share with the individual. So for me, I was finally at this point where I'm celebrating what we have. I've let go of these expectations. And then all of a sudden there's twist. And so it was like, you know, that was really, really hard for me. Probably the hardest thing I had to deal with out of all of it. And a guy that I was kind of seeing, I think we were only on like our third date or something. And I was telling him about my struggle with this title change. And he was like, he used a different verbiage. He said, well, you were just demoted to best friend. And the way in which he said it, it clicked for me, and I was like, you're right. Like, that's it. It's just a title change. Our lives aren't any different, you know? So I started saying that, and he hated that. So he was talking to a friend of his and kind of regurgitating the conversation we had had. And his friend was like, why did he say demotion? Friends are forever, and relationships come and go. Like, It's a promotion. And when he came back and told me that, I was like, I'm going to take that. And I'm going to use that from now on. So yes. that's why I referred to it as being promoted to best friend. So
yeah,
that made it a lot easier. That actually, it's so funny how just sometimes terminology, just words and saying them out loud can totally change the way you see something.
Right. Well, because in more of traditional like relationships, if you're in a relationship and it ends, it often ends. And like that's mm-hmm. its cycle. And some people are able to stay friends after, but not all the time. And so when you're promoted to best friend, it's like almost more concrete in like the expectation that he will be in your life for the long run. Mm-hmm. And in that piece, I think it's beautiful. And it's a much more positive way to look at it. And thanks for sharing that. It's really interesting the way you two came to that. So
So how have you taken everything you learned and all of those experiences and then use those to move yourself forward into your sort of journey beyond that?
Yeah. Beyond that relationship.
So my journey beyond that has been not what I would have expected it to be. And it's been a little weird. So, I feel like I've found myself in an educator role. So I'm on every dating platform you can imagine. Just about, I've got all the apps. Because now that I'm single, I'm out meeting people and I've met a lot of people. I'm having lots of conversations with lots of people. Nothing is going anywhere with anybody really, sadly, but I get a lot of people asking questions about polyamory and my take on it, my experience with it. So I feel like I'm kind of like more in an educator role now on these platforms. Like I'm answering a lot of questions. I've gone on lots of first, second, and third dates. Nothing ever goes beyond that. That's okay. Dating is a numbers game anyway, you know, finding somebody that you connect with is a numbers game. But, I will say the most exciting part of the journey though, is, I have been able to really work through a lot of my issues around sex. And now I can say that not only am I a sex positive person, but like I live a sex positive lifestyle. So I have learned in the last 2 years what good sex is, which I apparently have never experienced in my life until the last 2 years. So I've been having great experiences. Nothing's really turning into a relationship, but at least, you know, I know that it's possible to have great sex and sometimes even multiple orgasms. So
how did you, how did you discover this? Cause I imagine there's people listening like, well, I want to know, like maybe sex isn't that great for them. And it sounds like it wasn't for you and you've made that shift. So how did you discover that?
Well, first I'll say I've been in therapy for 2 years and I don't know how anybody makes it through life without a therapist. I have a great therapist. We have worked through a lot of my issues. You know, and I, a lot of it is just putting yourself out there and really, really working through the internal dialogue, the audio that plays in our head, and rewriting that. For the last 2 years of our relationship, I struggled with even masturbation because I was so in my head that I couldn't maintain an erection. I don't know how much I'm supposed to go into in sex in this. Okay. I was like, how much am I allowed to say or not say? Okay.
Anything you want.
Okay, good. So I for the last 2 years of our relationship, I couldn't hardly maintain an erection even for masturbation because I was so inside my head with this internal dialogue about whatever it was that I was either watching or thinking. And And so like my sex life, my sex drive was basically non-existent. And as I got into therapy and, we started working through my internal narrative, my internal dialogue, you know, I gave myself permission to explore. I gave myself permission to try things that I've wanted to try and never felt like I had the freedom to explore. And as I tiptoed into those little things, you know, as brave as I could, it just kind of trickled that I slowly set myself free, and I was able to try and experience something a little more. And then when I realized that, you know, that felt good, I would try a little more. I'm into toys now. So my actual blooper is associated with that, which we'll get to at the end.
Yes, we will. That's awesome.
It's really about the internal narrative. It's about rewriting and undoing, you know, those, that story that's written in our minds at a young age and letting go of it one step, one word, one little piece of the story at a time.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard, right? Like, just so people are clear, hard. Like that's not like, oh, you just do it on a Wednesday and you're good on a Thursday.
Right.
No.
It's a continual practice.
And exactly. It's ongoing. It's not like the words are ever just gone, but it's about when you hear them, you rewrite them, you know, and it's a constant and ongoing thing. It's just that it does get easier mm-hmm. to not hear them and feel it on a deeply personal level. The more that you rewrite that, the more that you experience that, like, that voice becomes softer. The shame that goes with it becomes less infectious, you know, and then you're able to pick up that courage and try a little bit more and keep going.
Yeah. I'm curious, how have your friends and family reacted, I guess, to the changes in yourself? Have you noticed that? Has that impacted you?
Absolutely. So there's like a couple things. My friends are great, but I have very sex positive friends. We've got one friend that we say he has a fast pass at the STD clinic, not because he's got a lot of STDs, but because he's very sexual. So he's very on top of being sure of his sexual health. So he mm-hmm. goes like clockwork to make sure that he's always aware and always in the know. So it's not for them. They're celebrating my journey. Nothing scary there. On my family side, my family's totally aware of my journey as well. All of my family, all of my immediate family, not like my distant aunts, mm-hmm. uncles, cousins, grandparents, stuff like that. But like my parents and my siblings all know. They know I'm poly. They know that I'm like living my sex positive life. But I have put my family through the ringer in shock treatment throughout my life. I've had a crazy wild life. And in turn, I say that saying that, you know, I also grew up really conservative, but my journey to know myself has been a roller coaster. And so I've put them through the shock treatment that was like, oh, good for you. I'm glad you're trying something new was kind of their response. Like, didn't phase
them. You conditioned them enough over the last many years.
Oh yeah.
So now I'm curious, because I know there's probably a lot of people out there who are like, maybe there's somebody else who's struggling with sexuality and their family and conservatism and all of these things. It sounds like you broke your family of that. You just like destroyed them and ripped that out of them. How did you do that? Like you said, it was a crazy journey and you've put them through the ringer. Like, maybe that's what more people need to do.
So when I say it was very conservative, like by age 14, I was leading children's church at my church. And by 15, I was training to be a youth minister. And then by 16, I was coming out of the closet with rainbow chiffon coming out of my ass kind of thing. Like I was just, it hit me like a rocket, and I was transforming to a unicorn. When that happened, when I had always known that I liked guys, but I just was in my mind, it was like everybody loves their best friend and they have their girlfriend. And then the first time that a girl kissed me at 16, I was like, whoa, I don't want that. And so then it was like, wait a minute. Maybe this understanding of how the world works isn't right. And so I started to like think about my feelings, and I was like, no, I guess this love that I share for my best friend that I've always thought was just like how you love your best friend, maybe it's because I actually love my best friend and like I be with my best friend. And so I spent 2 weeks going to every church in the city that was experiencing a revival. And I would go to the altar and I would pray that God would take that away. And after 2 weeks, I vividly remember this last day. And I had cried my eyes out for like 2 weeks, almost every night at these different churches, thinking that because this was a revival and the Spirit of God was supposed to physically be there, that he wasn't listening and he wasn't taking it away. And I was like, I can't commit my life to a God and a religion that's going to make me feel like I'm broken or wrong. And I refuse to not be myself. So I said goodbye to God and I walked out of that church, and then I came out of the closet with flying colors and I never looked back, and I shocked my parents. I had to move out.
At 16 or 17?
Yeah, 16. Wow. Yeah. So I'm the youngest. All my brothers had all been kicked out at like 15 or 16 anyway. Whenever we broke some rule, my stepmom would boot us. And my oldest brother had a gun when he wasn't supposed to, or smoked pot or something like that. So he was out. And then the middle brother had been masturbating and got caught. So he was out. So then I came out of the closet. I was out. And,
well, at least you had roommates you could go live with, it sounds like.
Right.
Not to make light of a shitty situation, I'm sorry.
I will tell you, I'll never forget, the first person I came out to was my oldest brother. And I know this doesn't really go with the theme of your podcast, but I want to share
it. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. I came out to my oldest brother, and I don't know why I knew he would be the right person to come out to, but he was, you know, he smoked pot. He was super chill, laid back, easygoing country boy. And I told him, and he looked at me and he was like, well, I always told you were a faggot. Do you want a beer? And I know that sounds terrible, but like, if you understand like the dynamic of our family, he had always picked on me for being gay. Never like he was saying it in a negative way, but you know how brothers rip on you kind of thing. It was the best thing he could have ever said to me, because to say it with those words and that carefree attitude, it absolutely made me feel like it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
The fact that he offered you a beer and just kind of moved on, like it's not a big deal. Like it is what it is.
Yeah. And he's always been an advocate for me. My senior prom, I went with a guy, and I was the first guy in my school. I was the first guy to come out while in high school. And I was the first guy to take a guy to prom. And I had so many threats. And he and his friends came and watched my car to make sure that my car didn't get broken into, and to watch me walk into the into the dance and to watch me walk out of the dance so that they knew I was safe.
Wow.
I thought that was really sweet.
That is really sweet. Yeah. You had people that had your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shitty that that has to happen, but it's amazing that, that he was there for you and that they were there for you.
I feel like I might have gotten off track of the question that was, how I shocked my parents.
Yes.
So then later in life, I go through an identity crisis because I'm trying to figure out who I am. And at the time, I was also doing drag. I'm a relatively artistic, creative person, and that was an outlet to explore that. And I was also having some issues with a drug addiction. And I think the drug addiction fueled by kind of this identity crisis, I found strength in my alter ego in drag. It was easier for me to pretend to be her than it was for me to dig into who I was, because I was experiencing insecurities and shame, and she was strong, flirtatious, outspoken, outgoing. So I thought I was transgendered for about 2 years and actually began the process of transitioning. And once I started to see physical changes in my body, it was like, my brain was like, no, hold the brakes. You're not trans. What are you doing? And so my family also went through 2 years of me being 2 years of me transitioning. So like I said, I put them through all the shock treatment. But I pulled back on that, stopped that, took like 2 years to really explore myself and figure out who I am. Got clean in those 2 years because my drug addiction quite literally nearly killed me, and came out stronger on the other side. So,
wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you again for sharing all of that too. Like it's also, I think it's amazing how it shows that you are someone that obviously works on yourself a lot and works to understand yourself and grow and push yourself. And the fact that you were in those feelings of thinking you were transgender, starting to transition, then pulling back and being confident enough in yourself to pull back too. Like it's amazing. And I don't know where I was going with that other than commenting on how, thank you for sharing that. It feels powerful to recognize the strength in that you have to work on yourself and to figure out who you are and what is important to you and how to, I guess, live your best life.
You know, that is a constant work in progress, because I think, we're all the product of our experiences. So our values evolve and change, our priorities evolve and change over time. So I think the roadmap to what is your best life is also always changing, because your best life, that picture at the end, might be evolving over time too. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I think what you just said there is going to destroy my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because my question was basically going to be kind of around what is it that you see, or what would you maybe like to see your relationship dynamics look like moving forward? And you basically just said that's always ever changing. But I guess maybe for now, besides being an educator on all of the dating apps, what are you hoping to get out of it?
Hopefully a couple of lasting connections. I know you typically ask in, poly people on your show, what is your ratio? What's your perfect number or whatever? Yeah. I don't know that I have a perfect number. I think that because I haven't had an opportunity yet to actually have more than one real relationship at a time, I think that for me right now, I'm focused on making connections. I think that it's important for me that whatever the number is, I'm able to meet the needs of those people without putting myself in distress. So like, I don't know that I would explore more than two. I mean, I might, if I had a great connection. It's interesting because there's a guy that I'm talking to right now. Things seem pretty cool with, because he's asking lots of questions and he hasn't like stopped responding yet. So like, that's good. He asked the same question and then like really dug into it. And, you know, in that conversation, my train of thought was, I think that I could entertain more than two relationships if they weren't like all in the same city. You know, like if I had a connection with someone that lived somewhere else and we visited each other, you know, a couple of times a year, talked regularly, there was a connection where we felt like we inspired each other. I could totally like that. That would be an addition that would be welcome. I don't know what that perfect picture looks like. I know that right now what I desire is a connection. One, more than one. I don't know. See where it goes.
Yeah.
So I was going to push you on something because why not? You said that what you want is to be able to meet their needs. But I think the other piece that you've said a few times is that as you read The Ethical Slut and did all this research, that you recognize that you don't have to meet all of somebody's needs. And I think maybe kind of if you could explain like the clash there, maybe the dichotomy between those two.
Correct. So I guess when I say meet their needs, I mean like meet the needs that are agreed upon as necessary for our relationship to be healthy. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that every connection that I have is going to meet all of my needs. What I'll expect is that whatever it is that we're connected on, I may have, you know, it may be where I have a great sexual connection with someone, but we don't necessarily inspire each other mentally. You know, it might not be something where we want to watch documentaries together or, you know, talk for hours over a bottle of wine, but we might have incredible sexual chemistry and want to foster that. So I may have a partner that has, you know, another partner that connects with them on that mental and emotional. And we may just have an ongoing sexual relationship that is great. And that fulfills our needs because that's the connection and what it's based off of. I may have somebody that, you know, inspires me mentally and emotionally. And so if that's where our connection is built and that's where we focus what it is that our needs are on, then as long as we're meeting those needs, then that's great. It's not to say that they have to fulfill all of my needs, but the needs that are based around that connection, as long as those are met, where we feel like we're being honest, transparent, and available when the expectation is there. So,
yeah, no, that's perfect. And I appreciate it because I kind of had a feeling, but I was just, because that has been sort of a recurring theme. And you also kind of touched on it in your answer. One of my other questions was going to be like, now that you've determined what for you great sex is that a requirement for all of your relationships? And it sounds like it's not. It's just, if that's what the relationship has, then it does, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. And I love that too, so thank you.
I will tell you, I'm being much more forward about sex though in my conversations, because I don't want all of my relationships to just be emotional. I would love to have a relationship that combines, you know, great sex with an emotional connection. That would be great to experience. So I'm being much more forward about it. But
yeah. I have an impossible question now too. If you were to meet somebody and you felt they met all of your needs, do you think you would still be interested in meeting or looking for other partners?
I don't have any expectation that I will find someone that meets all of my needs. If that happens, I could definitely be open to have, I'm sorry, that's my cat's tail. She's perched in the window right now, and that's her tail. I'm sorry. I'm open to conversations. I'm open to exploring things. I have my reservations about whether or not I will find that one person that meets all the needs. And total transparency, while my title may have changed with my partner, I don't share that title change with anybody else that I'm talking to. As far as our initial conversations go, I have another partner, because it is important for me that they recognize just what kind of a presence he has in my life. Because while we might just be friends by title, the presence that he has, that he takes up in my life, is like a partner. And for anybody else that walks in, it's going to feel like I'm in a poly dynamic. So I think it would be hard. I think I'd be hard pressed to find somebody. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that, but like, I think whoever I find that's going to be comfortable with that kind of a presence is going to be somebody that's comfortable with a poly dynamic. And I don't know. That's where I'm going with that.
No, I think it's super important. And like, that you disclose that outward is pretty powerful as well, right? Because like, I think, yeah, like if I was to say, let's say I met another person I was interested in and they spent all of this time with this person, then I found out this person was their ex, but that they still are basically in love with their ex, and for them the relationship hasn't changed, I'd be like, so, okay, yeah, you're still in a relationship with them. Like,
right?
They may say you're not, but by all like measures, you really are. And so, yeah, I think finding somebody that's okay with that on the get-go is critical. So that's super important. Appreciate that.
I get this question, or maybe it's a statement. Like, it can be posed as a question or a statement. I get this a lot, and it's usually a red flag for me. I'll be talking to someone and they'll be very inquisitive about polyamory, seems super cool with it. And then at some point they're like, I just think you haven't met the one yet. Or I think maybe you just haven't met the right one yet. And I'm like, you think you're the first person to say that to me? No. And right. I don't think it's not that simple.
Yeah. No. Yep. I think that's a red flag for a lot of people who are in this space. So you're not alone there.
Yeah,
for
sure. Totally. I wanted to, do you have any other questions? I'm curious about the blooper that you talked about.
So my ex and I, we live in two separate apartments. We're on the leases of both people's apartments because we were going to be moving into this one together. And then that was kind of like a pivotal moment where we were like, we have an opportunity to like live in our own spaces and maybe see how that goes. This was before the change in title. And so we were on both leases. He's just continued to stay there. I'm here. But we have keys to each other's places. And I've always been, you know, for most of our relationship, I was a super boring person in terms of like not spontaneous. I also wasn't sexual. So there was never any fear that he was going to like walk on in on me doing anything. And so, you know, as the initial part of under like exploring my sexuality, sexual freedom, it was important to me to learn my body and learn what felt good so that then I would know how to be with someone else and know how to ask for what I needed. Like that was another thing that had always been foreign to me. For me, it was always about making sure that the other person had an orgasm, but like, what about mine? So, you know, it was important for me to learn that. So I bought a toy. And, you know, bottoming is different than topping. it uses all different kinds of nerve endings. It takes, you know, mental concentration to relax, like things like that. So my initial toy was very small. And then I bought this aspirational toy, which, like, when I say very small, so like the first toy was way smaller than the statistical average size, because like I started very small. So then this next one was like slightly larger than the average size of a male. And I'm like, I'm just going to work my way up to this. I'll start with the tip, you know? So I'm on my bed, and the way that my apartment's set up, like if you walk through the front door and you look directly to the right, you can look right onto the bed. And so I'm on my bed, and I've just started to like ease down on the toy. And all of a sudden I hear the keys in my front door like jingle, and the door whips open, and I spin around to like see who's coming in my door, because I was, you know, just caught off guard, fall on the toy and impale myself. And he is standing there looking at me like, oh, he turns around, walks out, and I like fall off the toy, frozen, because I just impaled myself, which was way larger than I had expected, you know, way more than I had expected to take in that moment. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. That's pretty much, that's the moment of the toy. By the way, I got used to that toy real fast. So
that's one way to do it.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Trial by fire, I guess. Just do it.
Just do it. I actually don't recommend that. It is important to work your way up. You can hurt yourself. I luckily did not, because even the aspirational toy was probably still kind of small compared to what some people can take, but you know, we all start somewhere. So
yeah, very good caveat to that, but yeah.
And at least it was him, your partner, that
thank God, because when that happened, I was thinking, because sometimes the property managers will like check on apartments, and I was like, oh my God, is the property manager about to walk in my apartment? I had no idea what was going, because I was just not thinking that anybody was going to be walking in my front door.
Right.
That's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
I would say, to be honest, that's reasonable.
And now it's a good story between you two.
Oh yeah. He laughs about it all the time, all the time. We share it among friends when it's appropriate, which you'd be surprised how often that's appropriate in my friend group. So.
Over brunch, whatever. No worries.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It sounds like we run in similar friend group.
Oh, boy. Well, we wanted to also give you the opportunity to share anything else that we didn't cover in the episode and in the discussion. That you want to get out into the world?
I don't know. You know, I think if I'm going to say anything else, it would be, I mean, I guess like words of advice or words of wisdom or something, just, you know, whatever it is that you're feeling or experiencing or wanting to explore, you're probably not alone. I think that there is nothing more valuable than seeking out others that have those feelings, thoughts, ideas, and educating yourself. And I think it's also equally important that the people that are around us in our relationships, we are all the product of our own experiences. So being patient and understanding of where they're at, if they don't necessarily see your point of view yet, or if they don't understand your ideas, like just being patient and understanding, I think that helps both people go much further in life. So I don't know. That's all. I think that's all I've got.
Yeah. I appreciate that for sure. And then like one thing I did want to pick at maybe just a tiny bit was you've done a whole lot of work. And you've mentioned a couple of the resources, but like, what are some of the resources you found along the way that helped you like get to where you are from where you were
Besides ethical slut and a good therapist, those are the ones you've said so far.
Ethical slut, a good therapist, and a lot of podcasts. I have listened to a lot of podcasts. I've listened to a lot of interviews. There's one interview in particular, and I went back to try and find it. And I couldn't find it. I actually follow her on Instagram too, because she talked about her Instagram on that interview, and I couldn't find it because I follow a whole lot of people on Instagram, and I couldn't remember what her username was. I can't remember what her name is. But this was like 2 years ago, year and a half ago when I found that. But, you know, it's, we all speak and communicate differently. So sometimes you listen to an interview on a podcast and it doesn't resonate with you, you know? And I think it's important that you keep listening, because you're going to find somebody that has a way of speaking or a story, their story that clicks, connects, resonates with you, and it helps you see things differently. And I think that it is vitally important that we educate ourselves. And, you know, just hearing somebody else's story is educating ourselves, you know? So I think that's been the biggest thing for me that's really helped me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there any other, I mean, besides our show, were there any podcasts that have stuck out? I know you said there was one you were trying to find, but like, was there any that came to mind that you wanted to share? If not, it's okay. I was just curious. And then also wanted to give you a chance to talk about your podcast, which is coming up soon. So that's exciting as well.
Yeah. So honestly, I've jumped around a lot through a lot of different ones, especially as I was trying to find some that I felt really resonated with me. And I found it hard to find podcasts that were really geared towards polyamory. One of the things that I really liked about your podcast is that you cover such a spectrum. So yours has been the most consistent podcast that I've listened to. I've listened to others kind of here and there, and sometimes I'll just find, like the one that I listened to, the interview that was really pivotal for me, that kind of like pushed me to continue listening to podcasts. It wasn't even like a sexual podcast. It was it was totally different than that. But this happened to be a friend of hers that she really liked that then just shared her story on it. And it kind of became, because at the time that I looked at it, it was, that I'd listened to it, I'd actually heard about it through someone else. So like it was making ripples as being mm-hmm. really, you know, progressive interview. But yeah, no, that's awesome. I don't really have one that I listen to consistently. So
perfect.
To speak.
That's okay.
Well, like to explore.
Yeah. How about your show? Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So since I have been listening to podcasts and, you know, I jump around a lot, I kind of decided, and I was on a road trip one day driving, listening to podcasts back to back. And I was like, I feel like this would be fun. I was like, I feel like having a voice and sharing my experiences and having guests that shared their experiences would be great. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, if I were going to do one, I want to do one where I feel like I'm trying to fill a void in this, you know, area. And one of the things that I had wished early on was that I had one, I had somewhere where I could ask questions, specific questions, especially early on when everything seemed so foreign. So I started thinking about Dear Abby, and I was like, I'm going to do Dear Polly, where it's like a take on Dear Abby, like an advice column, so to speak. So people can have a place where they can reach out regarding a topic or a concern or a specific question. And me and somebody else, you know, rotating out guests can give our experience or, you know, our thoughts on those and maybe, you know, help give people a different perspective. So, yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Super, super exciting. And I love the idea. Right now, you haven't launched the show yet, but it's coming soon.
Correct. Right now, I'm just taking in questions and stuff so that I can kind of start to plan out how I'm going to roll those questions out in you know, a podcast format. I'm lining up guests to be on it. So definitely check out the Instagram, Dear Polly Podcast on Instagram, and you can submit questions, comments, concerns, whatever you would like us to talk about, cover. So yeah.
Awesome.
Well, links to everything will be in the show notes so people can find you and reach out, and we encourage them to do so.
Yes.
And we're excited to have talked to you today. And thank you for reaching out and sharing everything. It's been a fantastic discussion.
Yes. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
And we're back. Thank you so much, Philip, for reaching out to us and wanting to come on the show and share your story. It was wonderful to talk to you, and we're so excited to get this story out there.
And to get people coming your way for exactly. your podcast. So thank you for that work. We know how much work it is to pump out a podcast. So thank you for doing that. And as Emma said, thank you for coming on and sharing with us.
Yes. We wanted to just do a quick reminder about our Patreon community. Again, thank you so much to the over 160, 170 people that are part of that community now. It is amazing, and we're honored. So thank you. A few quick notes about that. We do have a women's group, a men's group. We have a MeWe chat that is open to everyone that's part of the group there. And it's just a fantastic and supportive community. We also do a monthly virtual Q&A, which turns into a really amazing discussion each month. So our next virtual Q&A or video Q&A is June 10th. That's a Thursday. We also have a men's group call on June 7th and a women's group call on June 9th, as I said in the intro to this episode. So again, all of that information is on our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. Click on the Patreon tab and you'll find out more. We'd love to have you come join us. And just like a little tip, again, you can come join us, try it out. If you don't like it, that's totally fine. You don't have to stay. We won't be offended. But we'd love to have you come join and check it out.
Yeah, and just as Emma said, like, we've found a lot and we've gotten a lot out of this community. And so I wanted to say a personal thank you to everybody in it for being there for us. We've leaned on the community just like the rest of you. So thank you.
Yes.
It's been huge.
It's a very, very good point.
And one final thing before we head out today is just to remind everybody that if you're starting to meet people again in the real world, we highly encourage you to go get tested for STIs before you start mixing and mingling. The way that we do this is a website and a service called stdcheck.com. They are an affiliate of the show, so using the links on our website does support the show, and we greatly appreciate it, not only for the financial support, but for the support of being aware of your sexual health and having those conversations. So it's, again, as we said, the service we use, it's super easy. It's really affordable. It's like $130 to do a 10-panel test. And I don't know, we love the service. Check it out. Head over to our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. Click on the resources tab, and there will be links there that explain how to use it and all of the amazing benefits of it, and get you that $10 discount.
Yes.
So thank you in advance for that. We appreciate it. And next week, we've got an awesome, awesome interview with Jamie.
Yes, you're not going to want to miss this one. As always, come check it out. And again, our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. All of the information that you'll ever need is there, right?
Yes. Everything you could ever want.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening.